Every victim wants to know how they got into a toxic or dangerous relationship. Was there an early sign that they missed? Had they been too trusting, gullible, or maybe naive? Most victims have been accused of being codependent, but what does the research actually say about this? Thank you so much for joining me today on Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience and a narcissistic abuse survivor. In this episode, we're going to dig deeper into this topic, particularly Sandra L. Brown's groundbreaking research into the dynamics of pathological love relationships. What personality qualities made us a predator's target? And how can we protect ourselves better? Speaking of Sandra Brown, I'm going to be interviewing her live Thursday evening, and there's still a few remaining tickets left to that event. I'm so excited about this interview because it's going to debunk many of the commonly held myths about victims. Find out the truth about predatory behavior and pathological love relationships by getting your ticket through the show notes below. And if you're hearing this after November 10th, no worries. You can still purchase the video replay so that you can keep it in your library of mental health resources. I'm thrilled you're here with me today. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and leave a review. Let me know what you think of the show. And finally, thank you so much for your donation to this listener-supported podcast because together we're shedding light on everything related to abuse. So with that said, let's listen into this replay of a TikTok Live. Imagine you have a super strength. Maybe you're Superman. And you have unlimited amount of ability to bend metal, jump tall buildings. One of the things we never think about in the Superman story is what would it be like to actually have to modify his strength to not have it damage those he loved? Imagine he took your hand and was shaking it. How would he know that he's over squeezing your hand and going to break it? Say he has you in a hug, how does he know that he's not going to actually squeeze you to the point that you can't breathe, that he's going to destroy you in that process? We don't think about the fact that super traits, super skills have a downside, that they can be a blessing, they can also be a difficulty, a challenge. Well, some of us have super traits as well. We are extraordinarily wonderful people who are very agreeable. We go along with things. We're very empathic. We sense the feelings of other people. We are emotionally receptive and love to make things work for other people. That we have the super trait of agreeableness. Or we might have the super trait of integrity. We're a person who's loyal, who sticks things out to the bitter end, to the point of beyond our own exhaustion, that we believe in the goodness of other people and that there are moral codes that we all should follow, and that we believe others are following these moral codes even when they may or may not be doing it. We don't think about the fact that some of our super traits, such as being an empath, could actually be a risk to ourselves that could put us in danger. That might be the very thing that brings us to the attention of people who lack these traits but need them in order to get what they want from us. That's what happens in a pathological love relationship. It ends up being a match between those of us who have these wonderful super traits and those who have a lack of traits of these same traits. That they end up, the person who's a predatory person who sees the world competitively, believes that everyone is out to get each other, looks for someone who is perfectly suited to overlook these risks, overlook the danger, overlook their bad behavior out of a belief in people's goodness so that they end up staying longer, trying harder, and sticking to something that actually is very toxic and dangerous. So thank you so much for joining me today. I want to really dig into this topic in great depth. I want to talk about dangerousness combined with empathy, how it can be a match from hell, how it can result in terrible abuse for us. This topic is very near and dear to my heart because I experienced it myself. Unfortunately, I have the super traits. So I have been up close to this experience and know the confusion, the betrayal, the brokenness that results when we end up meeting someone who has these toxic, dangerous, these traits. So I'm getting ready for an upcoming webinar that I'm super excited about. If you guys haven't heard of Sandra L. Brown, she wrote the book Women Who Love Psychopaths. It's coming up on November 10th. She is a clinician who has spent the bulk of her life studying psychopathy, as well as studying toxic relationships, pathological love relationships. She's the one that I've been quoting now for over a year. She did this study out of Purdue University where she looked at 600 pathological love relationships, thinking that she was basically going to prove that codependency was at the root of it, that some of us just come from troubled homes, that we're people-pleasing, insecure individuals who don't know how to say no, we practice bad boundaries, and then we find ourselves in these toxic relationships, and that if we could just learn how to be better boundaried, have say no more often, be more assertive, that we would be at less risk. Interestingly enough, that research did not find that. It found some extremely surprising information. So I'm super excited about the upcoming webinar on November 10th. We're going to be interviewing her. A panel of us are going to be interviewing her about what is the typical profile of a victim? How do we protect ourselves better? What do psychopathic, narcissistic, and dark triad individuals looking for in a victim? Why do they target these individuals? And how do we recognize that we're in a dangerous relationship like this? It's been interesting. I've been working my way through the book. Her study was mostly of men and women, whereas women were tended to be the victim and men tended to be the abuser. She just had a few men who were victimized with women predators. But so as a result of that, I'm going to today be gender specific because her research is gender specific and I don't want to take something out of context. But it was fascinating because what she found is that the myth, the theory that codependency gets us into these vulnerable positions was actually blown apart by the research. And so I can't wait to have her talk about what she found and as well as how to be able to better protect ourselves in these relationships. How do we recognize that we've met what she refers to as Mr. Darkness? How do we know that we've met a dangerous man, a dangerous person who's going to be at risk to us? And how do we know that we have these super traits? And what do we do to be able to lower a risk, to soften the chance that we're going to be misused by somebody who is a very toxic person? So I'm super, super excited about this upcoming webinar. It's called How Could I Have Fallen for a Dangerous Man? It's November 10th at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, an hour and a half. And what's great is for the last 30 minutes, you get to ask your questions. It was interesting. I just did a 6-hour seminar with her and her institute, her group. And she was talking about the predatory nature of these relationships and the risk that's involved with them, and how victims end up in these very harmful situations that are devastating to get out of. And one of the things that happens is we get very confused. We get very confused because of the cognitive dissonance that happens and the trauma bond that results in these relationships. In fact, she spends a great deal of time talking about how predators build a trance-like relationship with us where we, in fact, she said every time they start to speak, we fall under hypnotic mind control. I thought that was fascinating because they use cult-like programming in order to blind us to what's happening. There's a couple points in her book that I just thought was really, really incredible that I wanted to share that struck me so, so powerful. In fact, she said that she was in a group with psychopaths, and she asked them what was the type of person that they're looking for to get into a relationship with. And she said they described her treatment study. They described what she found in her study, which is really, really fascinating. So they're looking for you to have two super traits. And one is they want you to be agreeable, but they also want you to be conscientious. Those are the two super traits that they're looking for. Who knew that these super traits could actually be a problem? These are the things that would make you the really lovely person, but they end up becoming a problem. So it's interesting that she talks about how our value system, if you're an agreeable, conscientious person, that they end up causing this confusion for you, that you end up, that it violates your very sense of self. She says, for example, their lying violates your belief in straightforwardness. Their fighting violates your belief in social harmony. Their cheating violates your belief in loyalty. Their aloofness and neediness contradicts your self-acceptance. And their stealing, drug dealing, and embezzling violates your conscientiousness. So it's the very thing that you have trusted in yourself, your second nature. You're always picking the right path. Now that you end up in a relationship with someone who devastates everything that you value, but yet you don't leave them because you believe in the goodness of others and you believe that people, they say they could be fixed, and they end up, you get confused because they say they're working on it, but you don't know that they're lying to you as well. So that you end up in this impasse between wanting to be true to yourself and believing in the goodness of people and the possibility of change, and yet being with somebody who's being deceptive about everything. So I'll reread that again. She says that your value system gets violated in these ways. Their lying violates your belief in straightforwardness. Their fighting violates your belief in social harmony. Their cheating violates your belief in loyalty. Their aloofness and neediness contradicts your self-acceptance. Their stealing, drug dealing, and embezzling violates your conscientiousness. There's another thing that I read in this, and it actually brought me to tears. I hope I can read it to you that it won't be as devastatingly the second time as much as it really hurt me the first time. She said, she was wrapping up the chapter on conscientiousness, and she said, "Darkness's own authentic abnormal personality, stripped of his mask, his love bombing, and his rapid seduction techniques is absolutely nothing that is matched for the survivor with super traits. Without his predatory tactic luring, without his ability to use state-dependent learning techniques, without his sleight-of-hand trance-inducing tricks, he is nothing. He has always been a tiny, impotent, illusionary man behind the curtain." You all have seen Wizard of Oz, right? You know, where the great Oz, the all-seeing, the all-knowing Oz, and he's going to solve Dorothy's problems. That's why she's trying to get to Oz, is because it's going to give her all the answers that she needs to be able to go back home. She doesn't know the answer really lies within herself, but she's trying to get to Oz, and she gets there. At first, she sees all the theatrics of Oz, and then she discovers, and I think it's because of Toto, that he's a tiny little man sitting at a machine pulling levers, that is nothing at all. That he's a little impotent man. That's what Sandra Brown here is referencing. She says, when darkness's abnormal personality is stripped of his mask, his love bombing, and his rapid seduction techniques, there's nothing. He's not a match for the survivor with super traits. Without his predatory tactics of luring, without his ability to use state-dependent learning techniques, without his sleight-of-hand trance-inducing tricks, he is nothing. He is a tiny, impotent, illusionary man behind the curtain. Everything about him, from his miswired brain to his skewed drives of coercion and control, is the antithesis of a relationship-invested, integrity-oriented survivor. What I hope is abundantly clear is that the super traits are a group of personality tendencies that make for a beautiful person. The traits are those of any man would feel blessed to have as his partner. The traits of kind, compassionate, integrity-oriented person has only been problematic in the hands of an antagonistic, manipulative, juvenile darkness. Super traits aren't the problem. It's the personality disorder, the psychopathology, that dismantle normal psyches into a pile of ash. It is the personality disorders that the DSM cites as unable to sustain positive, non-manipulative change generated from neurological deficits that result in the inability to be empathic or intimate. If super traits are present in a normal relationship, then there's more than enough to provide the fertile ground from which love can grow and be sustained. The study of personality traits, deficiencies, and elevations and their influences on both ends of the relationship dynamic has been a long time coming. The theory of super traits addresses many of the questions I've had during my time of working in the field. I believe that long after my retirement, using these principles of personality super trait combinations as a risk factor will become the guiding force in prevention, intervention, and treatment for people caught in pathological love relationships. But more importantly, it is my hope that most survivors will discover answers in our finding the how and why women of such quality end up in pathological love relationships. I read that, I was like near tears. you have not been the problem. You got into this relation not because you're a problem. You got into the relationship because you're a beautiful, beautiful creation who was seen by a predator who recognized your vulnerability. And it is that vulnerability that made you then stay longer than you should and put up more with what you than you should have. And it is not because you're weak, but because you're strong and because you're lovely and you have integrity. We just need to become better at identifying people who are at risk to taking these lovely qualities of us and using us against us. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over for you to talk to me about what's going on in your life as we talk about everything related to narcissism, narcissistic abuse, and healthy relationships. Are you aware that I have other social media platforms? I have short form videos on TikTok and Instagram, as well as posts on Instagram, and then longer form on YouTube. Recently, I just posted a blind reaction video to TLC's hit show, Unexpected. Be sure to check it out and let me know what you think. You can find me across most platforms at the handle of Carrie McAvoy, PhD. She just came out of a narcissistic relationship, and her mom and brother are now estranged. Are they two narcissists as well? That's a good question. When we are in a narcissistic relationship, especially for one for any length of time, we get kind of used to the dynamics of a relationship. And we don't realize that we often then pick other people who are familiar because they're familiar and they may be narcissistic as well. So it is possible that they are. I would recommend that you get a coach or a therapist that can kind of stand back and look at it with you and look at whether or not there is the 9 criteria or whether they just maybe have some traits. It comes back to the hard part for both of this is that it comes to you learning to protect yourself. And this is what Sandra Brown talks about in this book of Women Who Love Psychopaths, is that you have to learn to withhold some of the better qualities of you, not just to give somebody trust because you're a trusting person. She calls it blind trust versus conditional trust. We need to learn to not just blindly give somebody credibility until they've earned it from us. And unfortunately for me, I'll have to tell you, Camp Garcia, when I got out of that toxic marriage and started to take a really long, honest look at my relationships, I found I had surrounded myself with narcissistic people. Now, not all of them were narcissists, but narcissistic people. Yes, we're all on a spectrum of narcissistic traits. That's true. That's true. But are we pathological? Are we creating disorder and chaos up to those around us? Are we primarily trying to control everyone and manipulate and exploit them as a way to meet our own insecure personality needs? So those are the things we really want to make sure that you would assess. Yes, you may have a little bit of narcissism, but are you to the point that you're creating disorder in those around you? The author that I'm going to be interviewing on November 10th is Sandra L. Brown. So that's the book I was reading from. She has two fantastic books, Women Who Love Psychopaths, and the other one's called How to Spot a Dangerous Man. How does someone earn your trust if they've broken it several times? Well, Vanna, I'm going to switch the question around. Why would you want them to earn your trust again? I'm going to be provocative. And by the way, if I was in your position, I wouldn't like that question. I've been asked that and I didn't like it. But I want to put it back out to you. Why should... It's interesting. You're the one here asking the question. They're not here asking me the question, which those who would try to earn trust should be the one who's putting all the work in to get it back. Oh, so yeah, you're telling me a lot more. You're saying he makes you feel like you're in the wrong for not trusting. This is, again, what Sandra Brown in her book, Women Who Love Psychopaths, calls blind trust. He's asking you to have blind trust. I don't know if I can find that section really fast because it's an awesome, awesome section. I had never thought about it as two forms of trust. Have you? The fact that there's trust needs to be earned. It actually needs to be conditional. It just shouldn't be given. I always thought that I'm being kind when I give my trust. Do you know most people just don't blindly trust others? The fact that you and I do is back to indication of us having, we're struggling on boundaries, I agree with you, but it's an indication that we have super traits of agreeableness. It's an indication of you having agreeableness. So let's see what she says about trust, because this to me was absolutely fascinating. She says, if we go back to the banking analogy, trust, aside from merely an emotional component in a relationship, is which one party gives the other the right to hold the other party's assets. Assets in a relationship can be fidelity, love, commitment, monogamy, and yes, trust. These are the gifts or the highly prized valuables of a successful intimate relationship. They are more valuable than other traits such as kindness or even temper. Essentially, trust is a cement that holds relationships together, which is why the loss of trust is such a deal breaker. When someone has lost trust, the relationship is bound to end. But trust in the survivor has undoubtedly been influenced by some of her other facets, showing us this facets list is connected to other facets. Facets seem to impact other facets, compensating for when one facet in a belief system is challenged. This helps somewhat correct the cognitive dissonance when one facet may be creating. So when trust is breached, optimism, or seeing others through who she is, seems to provide the correcting, though false, view of the situation that temporarily reduces the cognitive dissonance. These facets, working in tandem, seem to impact the facet of trust. But not all trust is created equally or operates the same in all people. Survivors operate out of blind trust without proof or demonstrated reliability. Trust is hijacked and impacted by seeing others through who they are, optimism in human nature, and the motivation of social harmony. In this, trust becomes blinded. Other people with normal levels of agreeableness would operate out of conditional trust. Trust that has been earned over time when expectations are met as promised. Survivors who have low levels of suspicion and high normal levels of trust believe that conditional trust is rude, and moreover, if demanded, something that would disrupt the social harmony of their relationship. Never having their blind trust challenged or abused, it does not occur to them to operate from conditional trust. Non-survivors or those who employ conditional trust operate in the ways that provide self-protection. They wait for others to prove that they're deserving of trust and don't assume they have simply reflections of themselves. They don't merely turn over their trust card to others they just met and give them carte blanche without the person having earned trust. So trust must be earned, is not blindly given. The fact that your boyfriend is asking you to blindly give it back means that he's looking to manipulate you because he doesn't want to have to be earned. He's asking you not to ask him to earn it. So in the same way that you would not blindly trust somebody, I love this example, blindly trust somebody with your debit card and give them your PIN number, why would you blindly trust somebody with your trust? They have to earn it. They have to show it through reliability. But here's the thing. I don't know if you caught it because she packs so much in here. She says the reason that we get caught in there is that because we prefer social harmony. We don't like discord or unease. We like everybody get along. And so it feels rude for us to say to somebody, no, you have to earn my trust. I'm not just going to give it to you. And we're optimistic. We believe people are basically well-intended good because we're well-intended good. So we see them with our own lens through our own eyes. And so then we end up thinking that they're like us when they're not like us. Yeah, so he makes you feel like he's the only one there and he's in pain and that somehow you're the one that's hurting him by not giving him this trust. Yeah, it sounds crazy making. That's a lot of gaslighting, Vanna. That's a lot. He's gaslighting you really, really well. So here's the thing. I want to ask you some tough questions. The tough question is, can you tell when you're being manipulated and you're changed? You're asked to change in order to make life easy for him. Well, that was really an interesting topic today. I'd love to know what you think. And with that in mind, I want to remind you that these are the last few days you can still get a ticket to the upcoming webinar with Sandra L. Brown. She's a researcher author. And if you're not familiar with her, be sure to check out her two books that are particularly interesting to this topic. One is Women Who Love Psychopaths, and the second is How to Spot a Dangerous Man Before You Get Involved. On Thursday night, we're going to be talking with her about what makes us so vulnerable to predatory relationships and how to reduce that risk. I so am looking forward to this interview, and I hope you'll join me on Thursday night. Be sure to get your ticket through the link in the show notes. And until Thursday, I'll see you then. Bye-bye.